Hello, Marvelites! Welcome to Marvel's The Pull List for comics coming out May 9th, 2018. I'm Ryan Panagos, a.k.a. Marvel's Agent M, joined by...
Tucker Marcus.
Yeah, Chet. You got to throw the Chet in more. Tucker. I love the Chet.
Well, thank you very much. Tucker Chet Marcus, namesake of my great-grandfather who worked on a railroad.
Yeah, Chet Chestington Chet Aurelius
yes.
Marcus.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Information you didn't ask for and didn't want.
Yeah, so... Fun stuff. We are, we're ever evolving and thinking about the show. So this week we're going to start something, try something, change some stuff a little bit, and hopefully it sticks. You guys like it. We want to know. You can tweet to me, Agent M, Brandon, evil producer Brandon. You can tweet to him. It's Brandon Grugel. Don't tweet to Tucker. You're just going to get weird GIFs and memes.
That's right. Stay off my page.
Yeah, totally. but what we're going to do is sort of break up the alphabetical breakdown that we've been doing. We're going to take the books and group them. You know, like some fun stuff. Every week that we do this could be weird. It could be like, oh, this is the Bone Zone section where all the books somehow go to the Bone Zone. Or this is the one where it's, you know, like the Cosmic section. Or this is all X-Men all the time. Stuff like that. So this week we've got our Free Comic Book Day books, our Deadpool and Deadpool adjacent books, our Spidey books, Star Wars, some team books, some X-Men and the Wolverines, and I think we're gonna try that, see how it goes, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, we have that mutant section, but the very podcast is mutating. It's changing. It's transforming. You could say that the Mother Vine has been dropped on the pull list.
We're not getting to the X-Men and the Wolverine section until way later.
We'll get there.
Tucker, gosh. We also have someone else who's going to be listening to us and editing our nonsense.
That's right. Welcome, Persia. Yay.
Yay.
Great time.
New blood. And speaking of new blood, I went to Free Comic Book Day this past weekend, saw a ton of new fans everywhere. It was really exciting. I spent like $110 on long boxes, just long boxes for my comics. They're expensive. But I had a great time. And this week we had two Free Comic Book Day issues come out. The first one was Amazing Spider-Man, and it has a little bit of Infinity action in it. The Amazing Spider-Man is your first taste of the new creative team, which is writer Nick Spencer, penciler Ryan Ottley, inker Cliff Rathburn, and colorist Laura Martin. It's super cool. This is their team's first story. Ryan Ottley's first Marvel book. I hope you guys picked it up Free Comic Book Day. It will eventually come to the digital services for you. But you better believe Nick Spencer made sure to include one of his favorite characters, Boomerang. Boomerang shows up. If you've not read Superior Foes of Spider-Man, go read that as well. It is wonderful. Tucker is nodding in heavenly agreement. This Free Comic Book Day issue sets up a few mysteries, the status quo, and a great twist for Spidey's private life. Then, on the flip side, in the back of this book, you get a nice primer on Infinity Countdown. It is packed with information and a recap of what the heck is going on. Super crush, as the kids say, right? They say that.
Crush-ish.
Crush-ish.
Yeah.
Like a cruise ship. We also had, for Free Comic Book Day, a twofer with Avengers, or Spidey's Heroes, and Captain America. Two great stories, both like prologues to the new books that are coming out. Now, last week, we had Avengers number one by Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness. This one is Jason Aaron writing it, but we got Sara Pichelli and Justin Ponsor doing the art. It's so good. You've got T'Challa talking to Odin, and then Loki shows up, and it really is this preamble right before the events of Avengers number one in the present day. Obviously, in Avengers number one, we have all the 1 million BC stuff, but, oh, man. Sara Pichelli drawing Loki is delicious. She draws him so cool. And then on the flip side, we've got this amazing Captain America story. It's the moments, the villain in the story, the bigger story that he's telling, and the mystery that it all, like, that gets kicked off right here, which is chilling. And, like, the narration through this, really good. I say no more, but there's a lot of really cool hints of what's to come in the pages of Captain America. So hopefully you got to pick up both of these Free Comic Book Day books. Now, from Free Comic Book Day, we go to a wealth of comics with all the books that kind of feature Deadpool this week, which there are four. It's amazing. What a good time to be a Deadpool fan.
Yeah, and the biggest Deadpool story of all, we're kicking it off with the big one, is Despicable Deadpool number 300. This is the culmination of Jerry Duggan's massive, huge, emotional, just insane arc that he's taken Wade Wilson on over the last several years. And really, this issue encapsulates all of those huge emotions and story beats in the perfect way.
And it's funny because the first 20 pages are the most disgusting comic book pages I literally have ever read. They are horrifying and so funny.
Yeah.
I was cackling on my couch reading this.
Yeah. I imagine Jerry was just like wanting to go out with such a huge, insane choice that he makes for those pages that is just kind of like one big joke that just continues escalating in the most insane way. It just feels like him be like, how do I top all the weird, gross jokes and choices that he's made over the dozens and dozens of issues of Deadpool he's done? And he did it. Yeah. I mean, he did it.
And you're expecting to start off with an emotionally devastating story because that's what he's been telling.
Right.
And then it just veers off and it's just vile comedy.
Yeah.
It is so good. Spot on. And the art team crushes it.
The art team crushes this. It's, of course, it's written by Jerry Duggan. And in the credits page, it's really nice that it says also written by Wade Wilson. But the art team includes some of the all-stars of Jerry's run, which are inks by Scott Koblish, Matteo Loli, Terry Pallett, Craig Young, Mike Hawthorne, colors by Nick Filardi and Ruth Redman and Jordi Belair, letters by Joe Sabino. The issue starts out with like this just insane, gross comedy, and it's so perfect. And then it moves on to really address a lot of the points that have come up recently, specifically with Secret Empire, with Hydra Cap, with real Steve Rogers, and the arc that Deadpool has gone on. This book is in that way a microcosm of the Jerry Duggan run as a whole, because of course Deadpool, we expect the humor, and you know, we came into this run knowing the character in a certain way, and I feel like after this run, which is for me an absolute landmark, we're exiting with a whole, you know, oceans of depth to this character. Like I said, it really encapsulates the entire arc so beautifully. We exit with some classic Jerry Duggan Deadpool characters coming back, influencing the story in big ways, and you know, depending on your point of view, a devastating end, like a righteous end, a fun end. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could be all of those things depending on how you interpret it.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's Jerry Duggan's last issue, everything we could have hoped for. And just a huge congratulations to the entire team.
Yeah. I will hold some of my discussions about this for a little bit because this is Jamie's pick for the week. It was also, I had a very difficult time picking this week. I had four books that I really, really, really would just, you know, punch a bird in the face for.
Oh,
that's a saying, right? Like you say, oh, I'm going to punch that bird in the face. I love it so much. and so I will talk more about that on This Week in Marvel later this week. You know what else is coming up on This Week in Marvel later this week? A woman named Gail Simone. Because we're going to be talking about Domino number 2. And Deadpool's in this. Fits into our new bucket system.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It is written by Gail Simone. Art by David Baldeon. Colors by Jesus Abrutov. And letters by Clayton Cowles. And I just love David Baldeon's storytelling. Obviously, I'm a huge mark for Gail. I gush about her stuff on This Week in Marvel. You'll hear that. But David Baldeon, man, the opening splash from this book has Domino, she's falling. She's been thrown out a window, but the shards of glass around her show her reflection, show you know, her panicked eye, her flailing arm, her body. It's just so visceral and cool, and it's such a great way to tell that story and give emotion. Like, you can see that and get a sense of what she's feeling, what she's thinking, if there's no dialogue. And that's a really important thing. You know, you have to think about, can you tell this story without any words? Because there are going to be people, whether they're kids or adults, who are learning to read. A number of people will read a comic book, look at a comic book, and try to guess the story through it. And there's a lot you can say. It's what we talk about acting a lot in comics. There's so much you can say and tell about a story from the art. And man, David is so good. The world of relationships that Gail and David are building in this is also something I'm really, really excited. We see her at the party. You've got her besties with Outlaw and Diamondback, but even the little interaction with Spidey. Like, there's just, you know, this book sits her now in the greater Marvel universe, which is really a great place for her. She's, while this is part of our Deadpool discussion, she's also interacting with Spider-Man. She's got one of her best friends is Diamondback, who is traditionally a Captain America character. She's got Amadeus Cho, who she's teaming along with for this. So it's a subtle way of showing that she is a deep part of the Marvel Universe. Plus, One of my favorite moments in comics is the bad guys, having just thrown her out the window, are confronted by her friends at the party, her friends and loved ones. And Deadpool is like, raise your hand if you'd bash these tapeworms and pitch them in the trash chute just right about damn now. And they all raise their hands because they are going to go to town for Domino. It's great. I love this book so much. Check out This Week in Marvel later this week, where we talk about this issue and all of Gale's stuff. It's exciting.
Oh, yeah. Another really unique take on Mr. DP, Mr. Wade Wilson, is You Are Deadpool number 2, which is written by Al Ewing with art by Paco Diaz, colors by Guru EFX, and letters by Joe Sabino. This continues the kind of RPG. It's like a point and click, but in a book. This issue is so fun because I remember when we were first learning the details about You Are Deadpool and what it was going to be, because there are so many potentialities for how this book can end up and how it could be realized. I remember one thing that the editorial team was teasing in a big way was how it was going to play with the art style and how Al Ewing was going to incorporate that into the story, obviously incorporate that into how Deadpool interacts with the world that he lives in, but also interacts with the reader. And we get a really big taste of that in this issue. He kind of has this like great like pop art style throughout. It feels like an old kind of newspaper serial kind of thing.
Yeah, well, Paco really hits that 60s vibe so perfectly.
It's so fun to see. And you know, the cover, it's crazy because every time I feel like I look at a cover and I'm like, who did this? This is awesome. It's Raza.
Right.
And of course,
I did
the same thing. But yeah, this is such a fun, such a unique book in the lineup because you are actively involved in the game and in the story, unlike anything else. You could spend hours reading this book and going through different iterations of the story and still not see everything. It works so perfectly and all comes from the just insane labyrinth mind of Al Ewing.
Pro tip, put stuff in your inventory. When you're playing through the game, you can actually like, you grab stuff, you put it in your inventory and you can use it for later. And there's a whole Fantastic Four section in the book, which it was great. So more Deadpool. We are talking about Spider-Man Deadpool number 32. Scott Hepburn, Scott Koblish, two of my favorite Scots. I'm just going to leave it like that, you know. Scott Koblish on Deadpool there, Scott Hepburn on Spider-Man Deadpool here. There's just something about their art when they work on a Deadpool story. And Hepburn, he has an almost graffiti-ish vibe to his work. It's so fun. This is written by Robbie Thompson, art, of course, by Scott Hepburn, colors by Ian Herring, letters by Joe Sabino. And Spider-Man Deadpool 32 is the third part of this oldies arc. It's following mostly on this tale set in the future. Spider-Man and Deadpool, who are they're much older, they're besties. Deadpool is weighed heavily by things that he's done and put Peter through. Peter's in a wheelchair. There's a whole lot of emotions flowing, but they're having an adventure. They're having a good time. There's a moment in the second page, I believe. Yeah, there's a couple panels in the second page where Deadpool looks sad. And he's a little like, meh. And the way Scott draws the eye slits on his mask, it just tells that story. And again, like we were talking about earlier, when you don't know the words, you can look at this and know, oh, Deadpool is upset. Deadpool is down. And what's going on? On the cover, we see big old thing, a very large thing.
Larger than normal.
Much larger.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of feet tall, essentially. Is that Ben Grimm? No. Is it awesome? Hell yes. And I know you're a big Ben Grimm fan.
Yes.
How much did you love that?
Oh, I loved it. It's such a cool little spin, and it works perfectly for a book that like plays with your perceptions in a lot of different ways, like in the past and the future, in Deadpool telling the story a little bit and him revealing things to the reader. It was a great little twist there.
Yeah. The thing revelation, and then there's a couple of subsequent reveals, appearances, moments that I was like, whoa, I want to dive into this world so much. This would have been one of my picks. It got edged out a little bit, but there's brutal violence, deep emotional beats that have been going on for the full series and all of Wade and Peter's lives. If we're, you know, thinking about the story that they've been telling, there's time travel, fourth wall breaking, really great comedic bits. A Lord of the Rings moment that brought me such joy.
So perfect.
Yeah. I know many of you listeners check out books because of this show, and I really appreciate that. I highly suggest this series. Very, very much from a deep part of my heart. Start with number 30 if you don't want to go too far back. 30 gets you at the beginning of this arc. but you can read the entire run of this book, and it's so good. But man, this is, it's a treasure.
And it's a perfect transition from our Mr. Merc with a Mouth section to the Spider with the Mouth, which leads us perfectly, naturally, to Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man number 304. This is No More Part 1. It's a new arc written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Adam Kubert, colors by Jason Keith, and letters by Travis Lanham. I love what Chip's done with Spectacular here, because he kind of built up, especially in the last couple of arcs, he's built up a kind of really interesting, different, new team for Spidey. And that includes J. Jonah Jameson, but it also includes Teresa Durand / Parker, who is Spidey's sister-ish. You know, it's still kind of, I don't know, I feel like...
Look, family is many things.
You know what?
It could be what you make it. It could be the blood.
It's a great point, and it fits perfectly for this, and it actually leads really wonderfully into the story, because this issue, we're back from the past. We're back to the future, as it's put in this story. And as with, I think, any great Peter Parker story, his kind of personal and professional lives are pitted against each other. And we really feel that here, because the Osbournes come into the game in a big way.
Kelly and Ozzy and
that's right.
The kids.
That's right. There is some really great stuff that also includes Gwen Stacy here in a really wonderful way. I feel like now that Chip has had ample time to kind of flesh out his Peter Parker's family and team and everything that we talked about, it's really interesting to see how he handles the classic Peter Parker team and family and villains sometimes, because he has this really unique take on everything. He kind of puts Peter in a really difficult situation here, both, I guess, philosophically and physically in a lot of different ways. But the other big thing that I wanted to talk about, I feel like because there's been a little bit of a rotating roster on Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man as Chip's written them, I just love the art in every single one of these books. Yeah. I think it just captures the spirit of Spectacular Spider-Man in a really unique way. Obviously, it's so interesting how you can separate it from Amazing Spider-Man, how you can separate it from the other Spidey books that we're going to talk about. But I just think that the art of Adam Kubert in this issue complements Chip's writing in such a perfect way. It's funny, but he captures the dynamic quality that comes in every Spider-Man book so perfectly. It's a little bit cartoony. The colors are so great. Yeah, I think it just works just seamlessly.
I love it that Adam just is like, I'm going to turn the page sideways and I'm just going to,
exactly.
I'm going to go, you know, vertically for a spread. And there's one part where you do have to turn the book on its side.
Yeah.
But part of the reason he does that is because the shapes of the panels he can draw are a little bit different, and he can do the squares that give him more depth and room to tell a story. It gets you moving into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a legend. He's fantastic. All right. So in our Spider-Man section, we've got a book without Spider-Man. But
what?
He's mentioned because he's talked about in the context of Kraven the Hunter, who is a guest star in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 32. Man, this is terrific because, let's be honest, we all were a little bit worried. Erica Henderson, who's been with the book from the beginning, penciler, artist, she's still on covers, but she's not drawing the interiors. And that's a big change.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, we've got new artist Derek Charm, who's here, and he crushes it.
It's perfect.
He's got that vibe and style that is completely different from Erica's, but he's also 100% great for Unbeatable Squirrel Girl because he's got that positive, fun, constantly moving vibe. This issue, you have Squirrel Girl and Nancy being friends with Kraven the Hunter, and that is one of my favorite things that this series has done for the Marvel Universe. You know, and that's saying something because we've got Koi Boy, Chipmunk Hunk, Brian Drain, aka Brain Drain, as a main supporting character.
Love him.
So good. And this just starts out as friends hanging out for an afternoon and turns from a fun day into a deadly game of death, most deadly. And it's so good. It has one of my favorite panels of the week, Kraven in his civilian clothes, which is like leopard print scarf, jacket. He's got like Adidas with a little bit of a leather leopard print stripe mm-hmm. on him and his pantaloons, and he's hanging outside his awesome Kraven van, which has like a painting of him and a woman and some animals on it. It's so cool. his look so stylish. Another top-notch, unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Okay. Also in the Spidey family, the Spidey corner of the Marvel Universe, but this character is expanding, especially in the year 2018, into his own corner all itself. This is Venom number one. It's written by the man, Dangerous Donny Cates. Pencils by the incredible and ideal for this book, Ryan Stegman. Inks by J.P. Meyer. Colors by Frank Martin. Letters by Clayton Cowles. Look, this is the first issue. As with many number ones, it kind of takes a step back. It's a new perspective. It's a fresh take on the character. But I just think Donnie, we know that he is a mega Venom fan, but he just commands Eddie Brock and Venom so perfectly. He has such a perfect hold on the spirit of the character and the kind of dark angle that is so crucial for a story like this.
In my notes, I wrote, quote, Donnie's a freak for Venom.
Yeah.
End quote.
And I, like I said, I think Ryan Stegman, who is kind of bulky,
God,
like this monstrous, muscular, like super kind of angular style, is so awesome.
Yeah, he's channeling, and he always has been, Todd McFarlane. But he takes it to a different direction, and there's some texture and some aggressiveness in Ryan's art that helps it stand out and just go over, especially on a book like this, so well. Can you talk about those first two pages? Because those first two pages are bonkers. Those are stupid gorgeous.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, the art in this book especially just, it captures a tone all itself, and it just marries so beautifully with the writing. I feel like it's a super difficult thing to capture that tone that just feels like you're entering a world all its own that is irreplicable anywhere else. That was like my biggest takeaway from this first issue, was just like, I cannot wait to keep jumping back into this Venom universe.
Yeah, this is going to be one of my picks of the week, so I'm not going to talk too much more about it, but I will say, on This Week in Marvel, I'm going to relay an anecdote about this book and about Donnie from the last creative retreat, a little behind the scenes action for you. So stay tuned to This Week in Marvel later on this week. Now, from a galaxy so close to a galaxy far, far away and a long time ago. Right?
Absolutely.
See, we did it.
Absolutely.
It is time for the Star Wars Corner. The Star Wars Corner. It's a corner full of Star Wars. Ooh, it is real good. First up in our Star Wars triumvirate this week is Star Wars Darth Vader number 16. Now, first thing I wanted to ask you, Tucker, was,
yes,
have we ever talked about droid sentience?
That's a good question.
Because I'm sure there's been discussions about it. You know, we've seen some books. There was the C-3PO book from like a couple of years ago, or the story of his leg, mm-hmm, really like gave you a sense of the droids as people. And yeah, you look at BB-8 in Poe Dameron is really like just this character with a soul. And, you know, R2 and 3PO and like the droid characters that we know. So I say all this because Master Bar, the Jedi who's hiding out at Mon Calamari, just gets his data stick from his little droid friend. And then he says, self-destruct so that we can burn this all away. No evidence. He tells his friend to kill himself.
Yeah.
And the droid's just like, sure, boss. I just like, it was so brutal to me. And I was thinking about the life of this droid. Is there life in this droid? What does it mean? What is the meaning of it all? What this book got me thinking about.
Yeah, it's a great question. I feel like you can dive into some deep, deep forums online that kind of analyze
every
moment.
Oh, no, I'm not going anywhere near any of those.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea. But any moment of like self-awareness and like when a droid powers himself off, like what does that mean? Versus like some droids are like pets. Some are more like companions. Some are more like friends. Some are more like tools.
There's a droid getting tortured in one scene in the movies, right?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's so horrifying.
Yeah.
I feel pain.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It's actually an interesting subject that I feel like, from what I've seen, is going to be explored with the character L3 in Solo, A Star Wars Story. Maybe we'll get some more hints as to the definitive explanation behind the consciousness of droids in the Star Wars universe going forward.
Yes. Well, the creators that got me down this path are Charles Soule, the writer, Giuseppe Camuncoli, pencils, Daniel Orlandini on inks, Java Tartaglia, and Guru Effects on colors. Man, Camo and the art crew coming through again with magic. There's this big panel of an underwater ship that carries Vader and the Inquisitorius, but the ship itself is so intricately designed for this one panel, this one thing. It's so wonderfully done. The sea is this cool, muted blue that works really well in there. Then you have the rock and the coral, plus the escaping forces, this whole framing device. It's like a painting. You go to a museum and you see this, and it's gorgeous stuff. They continue to thrill and amaze me, especially Camo. He is wonderful. And I was thinking, reading this book, about all the characters we've seen in this run of Vader, especially the Jedi, you know, that have come up and those around them. There was the Jedi librarian, the super swole Jedi who, like, was off on his own, you know, way that Vader fought in the beginning of the series. You know, they've been created or utilized, and then they've died in service of telling the story of the rise of Darth Vader. And I was reading this and thinking, man, seeing this Master Bar guy and all these characters around him, we don't know anything about these people. And then they, boom, we get to see the turning points in their lives that bring them to this path, and then their last moments. And it's such a great way to pull emotional strings, make you invested in their story, in the larger story that they're telling here, and also how much of a jerk the Jedi could be.
Yeah. There's the one kill scene where they're underwater, and I don't want to say what happens, but he uses the Force to take this one guy out in the coolest way. And then we see their kind of solemn backstory about what led them to this in the first place. It is so, so perfect.
Yeah. And the last page is one of my panels of the week. It was delicious.
Yes. Moving on to another corner of the Star Wars universe. Yes.
That means it's Tucker's pick of the week.
That's right. It is my pick of the week. This is Star Wars The Last Jedi number one. It is the adaptation of the film. And holy crap, it's written by Gary Whitta.
Yeah.
Oh man. Screenwriter, amazing storyteller. He was part of the story team that put together Rogue One. He also, I think, did a lot of work with Star Wars TV shows and things like that. He is so incredible, and he kills this story here. The art is by the unbelievable Michael Walsh, who does such perfect work for this. Mike Spicer's on colors. Travis Lanham is on letters. And, you know, I feel like with many adaptations, you would expect it to just be like, okay, you know, it's just going to be a comic book version of the movie, which is awesome and so great to hold that in your hands. But this is super different because Gary takes his own angle on the story, and we kind of get to see a few intimate moments that we didn't get to see in the film. Some deeper exploration of the characters' minds and their perspectives on the events that we as film viewers, you know are coming. And he just gets to play on those in really interesting ways while also tying into The Force Awakens and the decades prior. For example, we start this story in it with his journey into the mind of Luke Skywalker, which doesn't happen in the film, obviously. And it's this really kind of solemn, kind of worried Luke Skywalker, because he doesn't want to be found. And of course, he's been found. And we get some great moments with him. There's some really awesome space fighting, dogfight action that we get Poe's assault with the bombers on the First Order fleet. Really, really wonderful Porg action. And some great Leia stuff with Poe that kind of, again, has that different angle than the film does. It works so well just as a story in its own right. I'm a huge lover of The Last Jedi film. It gives me chills just thinking about it. I can listen to the soundtrack, play the movie in my head, and cry.
Oh, so that's why you're usually crying at your desk.
Actually, no. That's our other reasons, but let's not go there. Anyway, I loved this story. I thought Gary Whitta just crushed it. I love the choice to kind of give it its own thrust and take advantage of the comic medium in such a unique way. And Michael Walsh, no one better to capture the faces and the emotions going on in this story. I loved it.
Heck yeah. There's one little thing in this issue that I don't know if you caught. Leia calls Admiral Akbar by his first name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've never seen that or noticed that, but like there was something just about that interaction that felt so special and so right. It was just a little thing, but I got it and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
It was really like, they've known each other now for 30 odd years, right. And they've worked, and like, they're so close. It was so special. I hear Gary on Kinda Funny Games Daily, which is a podcast from our friend Greg, who does Kinda Funny Games. They do a daily video game podcast, and Gary's on it, you know, once or twice a week, and he's great. Mm-hmm. So if you need some weekly Gary fix, Tucker, check out Kinda Funny Games Daily. Now, for more Star Wars, our last of the three this week is Star Wars Throne, number 4, written by Jody Hauser, art by Luke Ross, colors by Nolan Woodard, and letters by VCs Clayton Cowles and Travis Lanham. Man, Throne and Vanto, breaking rules and making moves. That's yes. What they're doing this issue. It's great. It's hard not to like someone like Throne, like, and you want to get with what he's doing. He sees problems, he solves problems. He can be cold and clinical in his approaches, for sure. And there are definite consequences when he, you know, takes whatever path he takes. But he picks the outcome that works best for the long term and overall. He's thinking large picture, 5 moves ahead, all the different directions. He's, you know, figuring out what is going to make the most sense for a long time. And he solves a problem here that really upsets some people, both the people he saves and his bosses. But in his eyes, this was the path he had to take because it solves the problem, it does what needs to be done, and it's a long-term fix for this. And it makes so much sense. And the more and more I read him, the more and more I like him. And I love that Vanto is such a grounding character to Throne. He's the guy who's like, sure you want to do that?
Yeah.
And they like play off each other, and he's the more human POV character. It's they just work so well together. Dig it, dig it, dig it, dig it.
Moving on from Star Wars to another little group of books, this is our team up section. This is the team books, and we're starting with Exiles number 3.
I'm just going to be straight up right now. This is maybe my favorite comic book being produced at this time.
Wow.
And this is one of my favorite issues of the year, and this is one of my picks of the week.
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
Yeah, wee-oo, wee-oo, indeed.
It's written by Saladin Ahmed, with pencils by Javier Rodriguez, inks by Alvaro Lopez, and colors by Chris O'Halloran, with letters by Joe Caramagna. I just want to say, look, this is your pick of the week. I don't want to step on your toe in any way, but on page 3, as we get, like, the baddies of the issue, which are so awesome and weird and different, like, this is the weirdest, most, like, interesting angle book ever. I am so with you there. Someone says, and let me quote, intruders, milk drinkers, destroy them. These are my dudes right here.
Right?
I'm rooting for the bad guys because they too look upon milk drinkers with scorn.
You're all about anti-milk, anti-wheat.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. No milk, no wheat, no dairy, no glutes.
No, you got to have some glutes. Everybody loves a good butt.
Everybody needs a good butt. But glutes, as in no gluten.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Okay.
So I am with the bad guys in this issue, but
there are many bad guys in this issue. Those bad guys show up for like 3 pages.
Yeah.
And they are talking dinosaurs with blunt instruments and guns and awesome spiky armor, and they're all kinds of colors, and they just come tromping and stomping out of the forest. They're the best.
Yes. This issue is actually really awesome because we have a different universe, different reality. Captain America, who enters the game, who kind of teams up with the Exiles, and it's Peggy Carter. She has the shield. She's wielding the shield. She is very much herself. It's very much the Peggy Carter and the spirit of Peggy Carter that we know, but this hero version, this superhero version, who is so kick-ass and so much fun to see. And this is actually a really fun issue for me personally because in the letters pages in the back, there's this great interview with Bill Roseman and the Marvel Games team and a few of the developers that brought Peggy Carter, Captain America, to life in the Marvel Games world, and now she's in the comics. So it's a little bit of analysis about how that transition happened, how they came up with the idea for Peggy Carter, Captain America. Sarah Brunstad, who is the associate editor of the book, and Will Moss, who is the editor, they wanted to tell the story about how Peggy Carter made that leap, and it's a really, really fun intro to see how that happened.
My favorite cover of the week is Exiles number 3 by Dave Marquez and Justin Ponsor, which is a riff on the cover to Uncanny X-Men number 268, which featured Wolverine, Captain America, and Black Widow by Jim Lee. That is from the late 80s, maybe 88, 89, somewhere around there. On that cover, you had Wolverine and Captain America and Black Widow in their sort of current superhero costumes. But the story was set in World War II, where Wolverine was not Wolverine. He was just Logan. He was like the Special Forces guy, Captain America. I don't remember Cap's full costume in that. It was probably his classic Cap costume. But Black Widow was a child in that story, and she does not show up as she does on the cover. You should read that book. It is fantastic. All right. Anyway, on to more team books, which another one of my almost picks of the week, because I loved it so much, is Runaways number 9. Last time we had one of these issues, I said, you know, I'm really hoping that this Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom, Doombot, whatever it is a certain thing. And we find out that it is the certain thing that I was hoping for. If you have not read it, please go to your local comic shop or Marvel Unlimited and read the terrific Avengers AI series by Sam Humphries and Andre Lima Orojo. It is so good and so fun. And we had a Doombot in that book. Victor from Runaways was in that book. He is a robot man. I don't know, what do you call him? Android?
A robot man?
Robot man. So seeing them together, so good. This issue has sassy robots, the gang going to see Lord of the Rings. It's full of Lord of the Rings stuff this week. It makes me really happy. Happy dinosaurs eating cupcakes, relationship drama, Chris Anka and the art team continuing to just destroy it with the team's fashion choices. Like, there needs to be a college-level study on the amazing outfits and costumes created for this series.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good, so beautiful. There's, you know, major things happening around Molly and her best friend. Again, talking about the acting in comics and comic art, Chris Anka delivers again and again. The end of the issue, the last few pages, there's that scene where they're watching Fellowship and their facial expressions show how glued they are to the movie, how happy they are as a family. Then they come home. It's joking. It's great. Nico and Carolina, they're like elbowing each other and it's just so wonderful. Then the last three panels go from fun to shock to major shock to that final splash that is horror and confusion and sadness. It is terrific. So good. I wish I had 900 picks because this would be up there. Hands down.
Another angle on the team book this week is a really interesting one. It's The Incredible Hulk number 716, which is written by Greg Pak with pencils by Marco Lorenzana, inks by Juan Velasco, colors by Frank D'Armata, and letters by Corey Petit. This is a really interesting team-esque book because it's kind of this almost like an anti-team book. Because essentially what's going down, as has been happening in World War Hulk 2, this is World War Hulk 2 Part 3, the Hulk has taken over, he's locked Amadeus up in the trunk in his mind, and he's thrown away the keys and completely taken over. And, you know, as is the Hulk's wont to do, he doesn't want to be contained. But the kind of the superheroes of Earth have to try and contain him. In this issue, and they have to kind of maybe wrest control from the Hulk, you know, in service of Amadeus and for his own safety, but also for the safety of people around him. He is hulking out in a big way, but this issue includes Spider-Man, Ms. Marvel, Silk, Black Panther shows up, Captain Marvel is involved.
You get Avengers, Champions, Alpha Flight, teams aplenty.
There's so many teams, and it's really, really awesome because, look, there's a big throwdown that is always fun to see, no matter what Hulk book it shows up in. It is one of the most classic 1v1s that happens in Marvel Comics time and time again. It's always fun to watch. But this issue is really interesting because as Amadeus is kind of wrestling with himself, wrestling with the Hulk, wrestling with who has control, he's also thinking about Bruce Banner and the failures of Bruce Banner, how he thinks maybe the superheroes of Earth let Bruce down, and he wants to avoid that. But, you know, his tactics for doing so, you know, could be argued with. It depends on your perspective. But in that way, it brings in the legacy of the Hulk as a whole into play in a really, really interesting way. As we move towards Immortal Hulk, it's perfect and timely to think about what Bruce Banner means to, you know, his successor or his cousin in hulking matters, Amadeus. And this issue does such a great job of pitting that philosophical thing up against this kind of physical combat with the rest of the heroes. It's really, really great.
Okay, on to another team book. We've got New Mutants Dead Souls, number 3 of 6. There's a conversation in here. And I feel like this conversation of whether or not the Enterprise can blow up the Millennium Falcon is a fun, nerdy chat. My heart says Falcon. My gut says that big, weird looking ship thing from the Star Treks. It's got too many shields and zappy guns. And
I get maybe both performing at their peak. It's a toss up, but I feel like since the Falcon is just always busting and breaking down, like, you know, it's got to come back to bite
like,
sooner or later.
For boxing fans, I don't know how I'm the one pulling out the boxing sports analogy, like Floyd Mayweather versus George Foreman, right? You've got all the big slow power of Foreman, and Mayweather is just like, boo, 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 boo. Falcon would be Mayweather, but you hit once with, you know, a big shot, dude goes down. But on New Mutants Dead Souls number 3, it is written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Adam Gorham, colors by Michael Garland, letters by Clayton Cowles. I really dug it for a number of reasons, but it features Prodigy, who's a character I really am into. He was recently in the America book. He's now here. Check him out in an older New Mutants series, not the original New Mutants series. I think it was volume 2 or 3. Then he was in the new X-Men series, which was picked up by Craig Kyle and Chris Yost. And then, of course, he was in Young Avengers, which was by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, which is really, really terrific. Really, really good. So Prodigy, anytime I get to see him, makes me really happy. This issue also addresses some of the weird stuff between Strong Guy and Wolfsbane that went down in X-Factor Comics by Peter David. It's got just scary, nasty bits, some messed up deaths, and then horrible, horrible stuff happening to one of my favorite Marvel characters. And it's a very mean thing for Matthew to do to us. I'm not happy.
As we transition from not just teams, but mutant teams, X-Men teams, we move on to X-Men Blue, number 27, which is written by Colin Bunn with art by Micah Stowe, colors by Rain Barreto, letters by Joe Caramagna. This is Cry Havoc, part 5. Essentially what's going down, the Mother Vine has been unleashed. People are being mutantized by the bomb. And, you know, that kind of works here because the Blue Squad is kind of trying to fly in as fast as they can to keep this whole thing contained. And that is quite the task. Magneto has been kind of wrestling with this whole thing throughout. And now he's quite literally wrestling with it. But it's really, really an interesting kind of pre-war because there's so much going down on the ground level. There's just explosions and like bad guys everywhere now. People who are just like kind of, you know, exploding out of their own bodies, not knowing what, you know, how to handle the power that has come with the Mother Vine. They're also trying to inch closer and closer to Emma Frost and to the rest of the bad guys who are responsible for all this, who tried to get Magneto in on their plan, but he refused.
I mean, the real evil one is Miss Sinister.
Yeah.
She's a turd.
And that's what's really interesting here. As finally the Blue Squad kind of gets their stuff together, which, you know, is a really difficult task given what's going on. They are pushing closer to try and stop this thing at its source. And I guess we'll see what happens. It's kind of a toss up at the moment.
Neat cameos from Dragonus and Wildside, two members of the Mutant Liberation Front. That has been your 90s Marvel Minute. That was like 10 seconds. But still, I was really excited to see Dragonus and Wildside in this book. You don't get to see them enough. But continuing on the Wolverines and the X's, we've got Old Man Logan, number 39. This is, I don't know, maybe one of my favorites of this run so far. It's Old Man Logan palling around with the young kids at the, you know, Xavier Institute. It's him getting treated by Cecilia Reyes. It's him. It's not a like generally big action issue. It's a lot of character stuff. There's a lot of stuff with the kids here separate from what's going on with Logan. Glob Herman is here and you're just like, your heart is melting because he's going on a date. Glob Herman, who is
just trying to be a nice guy.
He wants to find love.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a sweet moment where his friends are like, man, I hope his date's going all right. It's weird, right? And it's the three of them like, if it goes good for him, then there's hope for the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Shark Girl and Anole and Rock Slide. And it's so good. Ed Brisson, the writer on this issue, captures the voices and the characters and the vibes that I've wanted from this group. You got art by Ibrahim Roberson, colors by Carlos Lopez, and letters by VC's Corey Petit. And Old Man Logan, he's having a tough time. His body is not healing nearly as quick as he wants. In some cases, we find out here, not at all. And it's really gnarly stuff. There's a great line from Cecilia because his eye is all messed up. She's like, you can finally go back to wearing that stupid patch or whatever it is. And it's like, yeah, give him the eye patch.
Oh, yeah.
I love Logan with an eye patch. It is fantastic. There's also an app shown off in here called Mutant Mingles. And I know Adrie Cowan, our social media manager here, she was trying to come up with like a cool, funny app. Mutant Mingles. We got to take Mutant Mingles for realsies and make it a thing. This is a lot of fun. Definitely check this issue out.
And finally, the last book of the week is Hunt for Wolverine, The Adamantium Agenda. This is another Mr. Logan story, but it's a Mr. Logan story because Logan is not around. And that's the whole point as we're hunting for him. It's written by the incredible Tom Taylor, one of my favorites. Pencils by R.B. Silva, inks by Adriana Di Benedetto with R.B. Silva, and colors by Jesus Abertov with letters by Joe Sabino. The previous Hunt for Wolverine issue was kind of this noir mystery story. This issue is kind of like an action thriller. All of these, the four different branches that are coming out of the Hunt for Wolverine story will all have that mystery aspect to them. This one is like a thriller. They're kind of on this mission, the team, which includes Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Man, and Spidey. They're hunting, of course, for Wolverine. They're trying to find out some secrets. They end up going on this strange tangential journey to try and get clues. They end up coming across some roadblocks along the way. They have to get through those roadblocks to get to the clues, to get to Wolverine. And there are plenty of surprises along the way. But it's so cool to see this quadrant come together and, try and find those clues. And, you know, it's great with the mixture of powers, especially with Jessica and kind of her PI skills in this hunt. It's a really interesting, different direction.
This is the team, like a new Avengers team. So Brian Michael Bendis for a long time wrote Avengers and New Avengers. And so this is sort of a core of part of his run on New Avengers with this group and their dynamics so well. And you get this flashback to a scene at the beginning of that team during that time period. And Tom evokes their relationships, their dialogue, the Bendisness of it so well, but he adds his own touches to it. Like later on, he's great with the quick gags. My favorite, maybe Wolverine making fun of how often they've heard Spidey's origin story at the beginning, or some of the quick asides that like make you raise your eyebrow for one reason or another. Like Tom does that so well in All New Wolverine, but there's the relationship bit that Jessica Jones drops when they're in the submarine, or the last page reveal, and the reactions to all that stuff. But you also, from the art side, R.B. Silva is doing such a great job channeling Stuart Immonen art from that time period. There are times when I was just like, is this R.B. or is this Stuart? It's so good. It's intentionally evoking that feel, that vibe, that style, but still RB makes it his own. He's got his characters are so big and cool and muscular. I dug it. Really, really good.
Oh yeah.
All right. So for the main books, that's about it. But there are two more issues out this week. We have a pair of True Believers one shots that get you $2, get you both of these. That's True Believers Wolverine Blood Hungry, which I believe is a Sam Keith drawn story from Marvel Comics Presents. Really cool. True Believers Wolverine versus Sabretooth. Great. Both of them only $1. Check them out. We've got tons of collections and stuff on sale. What do we got, Tucker?
We have Amazing Spider-Man Venom Inc. We have Despicable Deadpool Volume 2 Bucket List. We have Fantastic Four Visionaries John Byrne Volumes 0 and 1. Hawkeye Kate Bishop Volume 3 Family Reunion. Marvel Team Up Masterworks Volume 3. And Werewolf by Night The Complete Collection Volume 3.
Yeah, also tons of stuff on the app this week. Lots of 70s action. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whoever's putting the books in the app is just like super into the 70s. You got Marvel Team-Up, Master of Kung Fu, Werewolf by Night, rad stuff over there. Digital collections include some Marvel graphic novels and freshly digitized lots of books. There's a Domino Limited series, which is just added to Marvel Unlimited. Joe Pruitt and Brian Stelfreeze from 2003. Definitely check that out. Some classic Defenders issues. There's a source book in here, X-Men Future History, The Messiah War source book, which I always love those. If you like handbooks and lots of information, that's Yeah, jam. Now we're going to have the full list of all that stuff freshly digitized on Marvel Unlimited, as well as in the Marvel app, in the show notes, as well on Marvel.com. That's about it. That's the episode, Tucker.
Woo!
Yeah. Oh, one last thing before we go.
Yes.
We were just talking about all that Wolverine action a couple minutes ago, but this is the last week for new episodes of Wolverine the Long Night on Stitcher Premium. Now you can hear the full series in its entirety. If you're one of them binge listeners,
mm-hmm.
or you just want to go back and check them all out, it's a cool mystery. Check it out on Stitcher Premium. It's Wolverine the Long Night. You can go to WolverinePodcast.com, learn more about it. Get on it.
Snicked.
Snicked indeed. This is Marvel.
Your universe.